The Midday 180.
Delivered by Edley's Barbecue.
With Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski. On 104.5 The Zone.
We are live at Edley's Barbecue in Sylvan Park. They'll be open in an hour. Open at 11. Today's special, the brisket burnt ends. Paul, you had brisket yesterday. We were back in studio for the first time. We had Edley's delivered. Edley's can deliver to you as well at edleysbbq.com. And you went with brisket yesterday, so you're studying the menu more today.
I am going to take a deeper dive on the menu, and I'll tell you what will happen. I will wind up getting the brisket burnt ends. I had the brisket platter yesterday, so the brisket burnt ends are completely different element. I just have problem, and I understand and respect you guys getting catfish yesterday, but if I come to a barbecue place, I don't think fish. I think meat.
Sure, but I'm telling you, I would have thought the same thing. I was told the catfish is highly underrated on the menu, so I tried it out. The catfish sandwich, it's got a great crunch to it, but then the special tartar sauce that they make in-house,
yeah, I've heard good things,
is legit.
I think maybe a third day in a row of Edley's, I would might look away from the might. I don't know. Be hard.
Paul, if you're sitting there at Edley's at Sylvan Park right now, if you look over there on that beautiful Edley's logo thing, it says, a tribute to all things Southern. It don't get more Southern than some catfish, Paul. So,
hey, David, am I Southern?
No, but you know what? You are now. How long have you been here?
97.
Longer than anywhere else he's lived.
Yeah, adapt or die, Paul.
I love brisket.
That's a suggestion, not a threat.
Okay, I love... thank you. I'm waiting for the threat from later, somebody on later. I...
David really got like that late.
I like brisket a lot. I think I'd like brisket if I stayed in the north.
Burn-ins are so good.
Yes. So I just don't, I can't stray. I'm a guy that doesn't stray from my menu favorite. And oftentimes, when I stray from my menu favorite, whatever restaurant I'm at, I regret it. No matter how good the other thing is, I still think, man, I'd really be enjoying the brisket.
Reed, in just proper fashion here, I am drinking coffee out of a mason jar that looks like a jar that my grandmother would have stored preserves in back in 1987 whenever Paul graduated.
That's
so great. Yeah, cheers to you with the black coffee. And live from Edley's Barbecue, a tribute to all things Southern. Here
your,
we go.
Your coffee addiction is strong. You and Chad. Chad's missing that right now.
Chad with a well-deserved day off
Chad.
Today.
Taking care of family business.
Yep. Taking care of the girls today. They'll be back with
Hi
us tomorrow.
Girls.
Tomorrow, live in studio again. Looking forward to it.
Hey, there's some sunshine poking through out there. I didn't think it was going to happen. I thought it was going to be a dark cloud of a day.
Paul is cheery. 615-737-1045, our number. 737-1045. Stephen Godfrey will join us coming up around 10:20. We'll hit some college football headlines. We were discussing Joe Burrow, though, and what he's been asked to do within the Bengals offense as a rookie. He has 293 pass attempts. That leads the NFL. 2,023 yards passing. He leads the NFL in attempts. You would expect him to be pretty high.
They're behind.
He ranks third in pass yards, but they're behind, right. 28 sacks is how many times he's hit the ground. That's tied for first. And now the deeper dive. He targets wide receivers, fourth most among any quarterback in the league, 13% more than Ryan Tannehill targets wide receivers. They're throwing the outside.
Yes.
And they also get it out quick on some slants within this offense.
Well, they're
too.
Also in three wide, right?
Yeah, 11
are
personnel.
Are they doing much to the tight end? I mean, their third leading receiver is Bernard, and their fourth leading receiver is Mixon.
Yeah. Yeah, they throw out of the backfield regardless.
Leading receiver, Sample, I don't know who that is, but he's got 19 catches.
He's their tight
catches.
End. Yeah.
19 catches.
He's their tight end. So the key here is he's only been pressured 25% of the time. That ranks eighth. So if we're just comparing quarterbacks, he takes a lot of sacks. He also drops back to throw a lot.
Yeah.
And he's only been pressured 25% of the time. He and Tannehill are tied at 19th in time to throw per dropback. Again, I'm digging through numbers last night and
for time to throw.
Yes.
Now the Titans are obviously throwing a lot less with Derrick Henry taking handoffs.
So I think if you ask the average fan which offense throws the football the most, I think the majority, just and it's a solid guess, would be Kansas City, right? With Patrick Mahomes,
yes.
With the way they throw it. Burrow has 321 dropbacks. Mahomes has 252 in the same number of games. So that tells you how often they're asking Burrow to drop back and throw it. They're asking him to do a lot. Rookie quarterback with not a very good offensive line, and Mixon's only in there a handful of times throughout his first seven starts.
Yeah. Bernard, I'm surprised Bernard is getting the reviews that he's getting. He's getting old.
Yeah, and you know what? We haven't really.
Running back.
No, you're right. We haven't heard from him much over the last couple of seasons. But Mixon really took off last year, and now, I mean, there's a chance he plays this week.
But they need Bernard.
But Bernard has been very capable.
Yeah. COVID news, of course. Giants, per Tom Pelissero. By the way, Ian Rappaport's back. It seems like Pelissero, during Rappaport's suspension, has become the guy that the NFL gives a lot of information to. And that Ian is somewhat lesser. I don't know. Are you noticing this?
No, I haven't. I forgot that he was suspended.
Pay attention to it.
He was suspended for doing a Manscaped commercial.
For doing a Manscaped tweet. Yes.
An ad, yes.
So Pelissero says the Giants have quarantined all but four of their offensive linemen after one tested positive for COVID-19. Sources tell me in Rap Sheet. So that's a bring Rap Sheet along for the ride tweet. Giants are scheduled to host the Bucks on Monday night. The timing of close contact for others and whether they are considered high-risk exposures will determine whether they can be cleared in time to play. Then Rap Sheet says, from me and Garofolo, two Giants coaches were sent home because they were considered COVID-19 close contact, Brett Bielema and Jerome Henderson. So several offensive linemen and two coaches for the Giants now. So every week now, there's somebody that gets it, and then a cloud of people around that person that are now considered high risk. This is really the whole high risk thing, a result of what happened with the Titans.
Well, so, you know, the Houston story comes out. They've got a bye week this week. And
they shut down their facility for at least a day. I don't know if they're back or not.
Right. And now they're, as long as they can trace exactly who's been around certain players, are they going to continue to practice?
Is it Thursday? I think the bye week, still it requires 4 days off.
No, I'm saying the Giants. Sorry.
Oh.
Yeah, the Giants play Monday night.
Like, yeah.
Giants play Monday night against Tampa.
Nothing there about them closing the facility or not practicing.
Which is their protocol, even going back to camp.
Yeah.
When something happens, they're supposed to be able to figure out who they were around and self-isolate those people.
I just saw a highlight of this, because I've got a good view of the TV screen here, and I don't think we talked about it. This kick in the MTSU game over the weekend.
Oh, when it hit the uprights like five times?
Four, and it hit everything. It hit upright, other upright, crossbar, and an upright again, and fell out. I mean, the odds of this have to be infinitesimal.
Could not repeat that in a lifetime.
But it was in MTSU's favor. Win the game?
No. No, it was early in the game, I believe.
Unbelievable. I mean, it was everywhere.
I had to follow Middle's game on social media only this weekend. It's the only place I could find it. So.
Yeah, it was everywhere, though, the highlight.
Oh, that went viral quickly. Godfrey saw it. Godfrey's here. It's time to talk some college football.
We're going
to
talk for his entire segment about this kick. We're going to break it down in in such granular detail. It's going to be like nothing you've ever heard.
SEC discussion, and a bigger discussion I'd like to get into with us today. what is considered, how do we define good defense in college football today? Because the coordinators are making a boatload of money, and they're giving up a ton of points. And I don't know what's acceptable anymore defensively. What's accepted is teams are going to put up 50, and you just have to deal with it. But is that really acceptable? We'll discuss with Godfrey. Midday 180, delivered by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone.
Titans and Bengals. Coverage starts Sunday at 10 a.m. with kickoff at noon on your home for Titans football, 104.5 The Zone.
Midday 180, delivered by Edley's Barbecue. They're online at edleysbbq.com. With Paul Koharski, I'm Jonathan Hutton. Chad Withrow with the day off. Kirby Allen Kirby, Lucas Panzeca, Mark Harvey making the show happen for us today here at Edley's in Sylvan Park. David Reed, the chairman of the board. Always great to be joined by Godfrey at 38 Godfrey, Stephen Godfrey, Banner Society, and the podcast Split Zone Duo. What's up, man? Good to see you. Oh, hang on.
Oh, Kirby.
Kirby jumping to the microphone now.
And now he'll make it like it's your fault.
Yeah, he turned the microphone off to save the battery.
How's that?
Yeah, perfect.
Is Reed the one responsible for the music?
Yes.
Thank you for the Run the Jewels.
There you go, Reed. I like that. He's giving you props for the music. You have any requests for the next segment?
Let me think about it. We'll do it in the break.
Yeah. That way,
called Creating a Tease. Good radio.
That's right. Okay. So I mentioned before the break, I wanted to discuss the defensive effort across college football. We can say football in general.
Yeah.
But specifically with just in the SEC alone, you know, Saban saying, you know, it's all about offense now. I would say that too if my offense were putting up the numbers they're putting up. But I was thinking about Ole Miss being at 1-4. They're playing Vandy. We were discussing the numbers that Ole Miss's offense put up against Alabama's defense, which is just crazy to think about. What comes to mind for you when you see defensive efforts over the last 3 or 4 years, but all of a sudden now this year, when I would have thought with the offseason and the uncertainty and everything, that offense would be held back some,
right,
and the defense would have the advantage.
You are seeing that in some instances, but I think that's a great point in that offenses should need more time to gel. But the fact that they're still being successful, I think it points to the state of the game, the rules of the game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sounding like a defensive coordinator because every time I ask these questions of defensive coordinators, they want it to, you know, make it out to be a conspiracy, right? There's a, I think, a bigger and more important trend, which was we all looked at what was happening with the air raid about 15 to 20 years ago. I can remember when NFL writers, guys like Pete Prisco, were laughing at the concept of Texas air raid quarterbacks becoming successful in the league. And now Patrick Mahomes is the single best player off of a 7-8 win Texas Tech team, right? That shift in a short amount of time, I don't think has met its response. So the way it's been taught to me by coaches when I ask these questions is, there's a call and response in football, right? Bill Walsh creates a call. There's a response somewhere around the mid-80s with the Bears defense. We have not seen the response yet. I think for a number of reasons. The athletes in recruiting are shifted so dramatically to the offensive side of the football in Texas, Oklahoma, and those regions. That methodology has actually kind of bled into the Southeast, which we all swore it would never happen. And it has. Alabama, essentially, the Alabama that we know in 2020 – is diametrically opposed to the Alabama of 2007 when Saban gets there. And the key turning factor there, the mitigating factor, is Lane Kiffin when he becomes offensive coordinator at Alabama. They ran an entire – I've said this 1,000 times. That Sugar Bowl that they lost to Ohio State in the very first playoff, they ran their offense through Amari Cooper. That was unheard of compared to what the style in which Alabama was playing football up until that point. And Nick Saban, for that matter, was coaching football up until that point. Just a couple years ago, Saban himself goes to SEC Media Days and goes on this entire disinformation campaign about how up-tempo offenses are physically dangerous.
Right.
This was a narrative that a lot of people carried water for as recently as 5 years ago. So I don't know if defenses have crafted a response yet. I think that's the biggest thing. Now, in terms of what they do to fix the problem, it's a possession game. It looks a lot more like basketball, in which defensive coordinators are now not looking at total yards. They're looking at points per drive. So, in other words, if they hold the ball for a minute and 43 seconds on offense, They go all the way to the opponent's 20, but we cause a turnover. That's a success. That's considered a win for a defense. It's a very different mindset than it was even 10 years ago.
I'm watching Kiffin run up and down the field against Alabama.
And the response is that he's stealing signals because that's the best thing they can come up with. It's simply not the case because they're moving too fast to intercept, relay, and then adjust to a signal. By the way, what defensive signal would they steal? Honestly, what are you seeing? The personnel's not changing. They're not changing the fronts or the looks because they're moving so fast. So what is it that you would steal?
Well, then, now the flip side of this, I'm watching Alabama, Tennessee, and they're running, you know, handoffs on third and long so they don't turn it over and give the short field. But they gave up 48 points.
Right.
Doing that.
That might be a little bit more of a user error in Tennessee's instance.
But you get my point.
Sure,
like, they're defensively, it's, you know, you're going to have to put up 40 points to hang.
Right. Auburn Ole Miss last week. Everyone's talking about it in the context of that bad call where the guy, you know, his two fingers grazed the football. That would have changed the game, obviously. I think Ole Miss probably wins with that call going the right way. Ole Miss is going for two, right? And basically creating 8-point opportunities at every chance they can get because they are absolutely convinced that the other team is going to go back into the red zone. It is a foregone conclusion. Look at what happened with Penn State and Indiana, or look at what happened with the Falcons and Lions. We are now convinced that these offenses on the other side of the ball will be back in the red zone in under 50, 60, 70 seconds.
So conceding, a team conceding that its defense is this bad.
Yeah.
The Texans did it when Crennel went for the two, basically saying they're going down and scoring. These examples you're giving, Ole Miss is conceding it all the time. Where are fan bases on accepting this? This is kind of what Hutton's saying. People, not just teams are now accepting it, but it seems like fan bases are accepting it. Where there was a day not long ago where we'd be outraged at the idea that you couldn't believe that you were going to get a stop somewhere in three sets of downs over the course of 3 minutes of play.
I think it's changing too slow for us to figure that. Fan apathy or fan opinion is too mercurial for us to kind of figure out, Paul. But I do think that, look, the Seahawks are very successful right now because the Seahawks pass a lot. They pass on first down, they pass on second, they pass on third down, right? Pass-oriented offenses are less strange than they used to be. They're not niche. I think more people are learning to understand this. Honestly, the last couple years of Brady and the Patriots, that was a pass-oriented offense, right? Then obviously what Mahomes has done in Kansas City. That has bled over into college where you see these sort of stalwart teams like your Alabamas learning to do the same thing and being effective at it. I think that changes the fans' perspective in these situations. Now, nobody, if you're just talking about the partisan feeling of being a fan, wants to admit that my defense is going to give up 60 in under 30 seconds. But it happens all the time now. So I think they're adjusting.
And if you're doing it too, you can maybe.
I think when it becomes tit for tat and more offenses like this develop, I think it becomes a little bit more commonplace to expect that.
I guess the other thing that Paul and I have chatted about on and off air is, you know, that you watch these broadcasts and the coverage is, oh, you know, the play calling here, the offensive numbers, tremendous. Well, the defensive coordinator on the opposite side is getting paid $1 million as well.
Yes.
And it's just accepted that they're not really going to have a high success rate.
Well, I just think we have to – what defensive coordinators at least love to tell me is we have to redefine what we consider to be success.
Right, and that's what we don't know.
Yeah, and really right now what that means is flipping two possessions. It's that simple. Can you change two possessions? If you are going tit for tat, if it's an Ole Miss Alabama type game, or we're seeing this now if it was – I mean, Chiefs-Ravens got a little lopsided, but if you have those two types of offenses going, and the Titans are such an – there's such an asterisk right now in the coaching world because of just the way that they coach offense and what they want to do. I'm kind of shocked Arthur Smith is getting as much play as he is as a head coach.
Because of the run game?
Yeah, it's just I'm not saying I like it or dislike it. I mean, I'm kind of shocked to see the Raiders have as much success as they've had doing somewhat similar things. And I'm not saying you shouldn't be a head coach. I'm just saying right now it is so pass-centric. It is so aggressive-minded. And I think advanced stats are playing into that too. And I think that's changing our mindsets. I think more casual fans are embracing advanced analytics, or at least embracing someone like us saying, hey, advanced analytics say you should go for it on fourth down between this yard line and this yard line more often. Like, I was watching a game with my old man recently, and teams were going for it on fourth down on midfield, and I could hear the generation gap because football was inherently risk averse and defensive oriented for the better part of a generation and a half at the professional level.
Stephen Godfrey with us, Banner Society. You can join the college football discussion, 615-737-1045, our number. Wisconsin, season in jeopardy. I know Nebraska tried to pick up Tennessee Chattanooga. That's the report. Chattanooga got tested. They were trying to play that game.
They were on their way, yeah.
The Big Ten said no, so that game's not going to be played. But they've because it's 8 games in 8 weeks, they've left themselves no room for maneuvering games.
What a trash move, by the way.
What's the rationale for saying no?
Play? Well, because they want the testing within their own conference.
Yeah. What's the rationale for saying no to
UTC? Or honestly, because the Big Ten's trying to save face at a point now in which they're – we've talked about this like a month and a half ago. They established a very, very hard-line narrative, and now that they're just like everybody else, essentially with the same problems, they've actually put themselves at a disadvantage because of the bye week situation where they're going to have an incongruent division race on both sides. I don't know if it's necessarily going to affect the national title picture that much, at least in relation to Wisconsin.
Right.
But it's going to cause a problem. Not playing UTC. What's the advantage of playing UTC, first off? If you're UTC...
Your kids play.
Self-examination. What you did was you caught a check. Okay? You figured out a way you could catch a check. And what I mean by that is just make a little money by trotting your guys up there to get vaporized on a short notice. Like, how much longer do we have to act like this is in any way, shape, or form academically oriented? My God.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
But the other thing why is the Big Ten, I think the one thing that that's been somewhat respectable about the NFL anyway is that they've adapted. Like, we've seen changes.
Yes.
Like, they're... Right now, this close contact thing seems to be a result of what happened with the Titans, right? The Saturday that went awry and that Minnesota trip. They've now adjusted the protocols that makes that far less likely to happen.
Right.
So, on the other side of that, it seems like a 24-day shutdown is outrageously long.
It is.
Given what we've seen. But there's no flexibility from the Big Ten on that.
But there's no consistency. The league is so well designed right now and what they're doing because, one, they're a league. They have centralized leadership. They have a players' union who can respond on behalf of the labor, and then the ownership can work as a single unified group. You can make these decisions and then adapt to them because people are organized and in response with one another. This laughable thing about the sport of college football has bit them in the rear end so hard this year, where they have no centralized authority, they have no commissioner, they have no standards as you go from conference to conference. I respect the fact the Big Ten came out and said, we want to be the strongest and the most cautious because we don't know what the mitigating risks are. If there's any chance, a 1% chance of myocardial infarction, if there's a 1% chance of lasting heart damage, let's go ahead and exercise that amount of caution, all right? Because the sport would be very different if they had applied that mindset in other ways, like CTE. So I respected that. The problem is now there's no review system in place.
Right. And when you also consider, so Wisconsin has what, 12 cases, I believe?
That the last headline I saw was 12, but growing rapidly.
Growing rapidly.
Yes.
Florida had 36.
Yes.
And they came back how quickly? Like, so, you see what I'm saying?
Came back. I'm doing radio finger
quotes. Back to play.
Sure. But there's no consistent baseline for a testing requirement. It's just like academics, y'all. This is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
You get shocked because so-and-so suddenly is eligible because he made it past some clearinghouse. It's the same methodology. There's no difference at all between academics and COVID testing and the disparity between the two in college athletics. If you want it to happen, you can find a way.
Who's the best team right now?
Oh, man. What if it's Ohio State?
It could be.
It's very possible.
But what does that mean for Ohio State?
It means that you basically can't slip. I think that's the other disadvantage for coming back the way they did, is that if you were to slip, it would maybe be against one or two programs. That's it. I'll put it this way. How can anyone sit down and tell me that the best team in college football is in the SEC? Where's the dominance?
That's why I asked the question.
Because they trotted out. Now, the SEC did the complete opposite, right? We're going to start first, basically first, right, to the powers. We're going to, I think, don't know if they were. I think no. Big 12 played non-conference games first, but the SEC wanted to reestablish as much of their previous schedule, previous time frame, specifically to get their brands out there. I said this a couple weeks ago. They put their best teams against their worst teams in week one so that they could protect those brands. None of those brands look good. None of them do. Alabama is not Alabama by their own standards in the last decade. You can't argue me on that.
Could still be the best, all right.
They're the best of what that is and what college football will be come playoff time is a lot. It's going to be opportunistic, inconsistent teams.
Where is Clemson?
Clemson is, I mean, if you're looking for a constant, if you're looking for something that isn't just completely affected by the variables of 2020, it's probably Clemson by virtue of the fact the ACC is what it is, and Clemson hasn't really changed anything. Incumbent quarterback, yep. They haven't missed a beat in Jeff Scott leaving as a play caller. I think that's a big, big plus for them that no one talks about, is that they've kept an internal consistency in the offensive system, but they also have the best quarterback in the game.
The throw he made in the end zone this past week, it was insane. Back across the end zone, Trevor Lawrence.
Look, man, the only thing that gets always me through, impressive. The only thing that gets me through the NFL season right now is that it's possible that Trevor Lawrence tells the Jets he won't do it, and that someone like Atlanta could engineer a trade. I invest a lot of myself.
What did I see? Like, there's 20% of the NFL has two wins or fewer.
Right.
Yeah.
There could be a lot. I mean, first off, there's going to be a lot of tie breaking. For draft position, if this holds,
well, there's a couple of teams that would take.
Am I crazy, Paul? They're going to play each other. Is that out of the ordinary that we have this many bad teams?
Feels like it.
Like, I mean, bad teams.
There are going to be a lot of tiebreakers if it holds, and some of these teams are going to play each other, so somebody's going to have to win.
Right.
But a lot of tiebreakers at play for draft order.
Yep.
And then you say this is a whole nother conversation. You say a lot of teams wouldn't take him, but what Arizona did.
Yep.
May set off a thing where you take him and you
Cincinnati's
deal the
not
quarterback. Cincinnati's definitely
Houston's
not
taking him.
No.
They just gave the deal to Watson this offseason.
No. Yeah.
They're not taking him.
A lot of this is going to be affected by where Bienemy goes because it's going to be the style of quarterback. The interesting thing about this is that Bienemy, and this actually has a lot of college influence because he pulls a lot from college, he's fit for Fields and he's fit for Lawrence. So which franchise that's way up there can land Bienemy and then build around one of those two players. So that coaching hire has more impact on the draft than the records do, in my opinion.
But who else are we talking about down there that could take him? I was just reading.
There's
Dallas.
Both New York teams.
Dallas with Prescott.
NFC East.
I just read somebody saying, you know, McCarthy. Maybe would say, well, I'm not in love with Dak the way everybody else is in love with Dak.
Well, he's also a free agent, and he's hurt.
Yeah.
I'd rather have an easy out. Yeah. But I mean, Dak for most people would be a quarterback you'd absolutely take.
Sure, but they have an easy out if they want to rebuild and go with
between
the
franchise him being
guy.
A free agent and him being hurt.
You
but,
have a lot
but
of...
the thing is, if you have Dak under potential franchise tag, you sure in hell would want to get something for him, not just let him walk.
I mean, I don't know what you can get. He's coming off a broken leg now.
I know they're screwed.
Well, you're not going to tag him and then waste a top five draft pick on a quarterback, right?
Well, the tag is
if you tag him and trade him,
it's 120% next year too. He's tagged this year.
Yeah, still though, I mean, are you just going to let him walk away? Or are you going to try to manipulate something where you could get something for him that injury complicates the hell out of it?
That's if McCarthy's there next year. I don't know how bad it could get out there, how fast. And Jones,
well, seems like they're tanking now. They're dealing people, cutting people.
Right.
And
more trades than I recall, too.
And who's the quarterback? DiNucci?
Yep. Ben DiNucci.
Andy Dalton got murdered.
Boy, that hit was vicious.
There are a lot of – it's funny because a lot of hits when they go through coaching, the coaching texts and sort of the gossip world, it's usually more – it's still a rub some dirt on it culture – And that one specifically, people were sort of passing around as like, this is what we need to put up on the board in our defensive meetings as this is, you are impacting someone's actual life. Do not do this.
Cannot happen.
It becomes a cautionary tale.
That's one that goes up on the board, and then the Metcalf chase down, everybody was saying,
absolutely.
Is played in every high school for eternity as the look at what you can do when you hustle your ass off.
Shout out to NFL media, by the way, who said he was too muscular to be a wide receiver.
I was totally out on him, too.
You were?
Yeah.
He is a beast.
I mean, I bought all that.
By the way.
Stiff. He looked stiff.
I don't know how
much time. He's not stiff.
I don't know how much time we have in this segment.
Just blow it
up. If anybody wants to ask me about Hugh Freeze and Liberty, right, like what job is he going to get because they're undefeated right now, Paul, Dawson Knox, Buffalo Bills, DK Metcalf, Seattle Seahawks, A.J. Brown, Tennessee Titans. Do you know what they have in common?
Something about Hugh Freeze. When we come back, I'm going to ask Stephen Godfrey of Banner Society what these guys have in common and where Hugh Freeze is headed.
Okay.
Won six games that year.
Midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone.
Coming up this afternoon on the 3HL.
Tennessee Vol Talk with former Tennessee wide receiver Jason Swain.
Vandy hosts Lane Kiffin and the Ole Miss Rebels. Derek Mason, Swaggy D, hops on.
I bet Lane Kiffin will tweet about it. What do you think? Plus, yeah. Jay Morrison covers the Bengals. We'll check in with him.
This afternoon from 3 to 6 on 104.5 The Zone.
We're about to open the doors here at Edley's Barbecue in Sylvan Park, 12 Southeast Nashville. There are other locations. Poncho and Lefty's Cantina across the street from us here in Sylvan Park as well.
Love it.
Edley'sBBQ.com, the website where you can order delivery to your office or home today. Edley'sBBQ.com. Godfrey with us, the new podcast, Split Zone Duo. Tell us about that.
That Split Zone Duo is a bizarre in-joke amongst offensive line coaches. So, of course, we decided to name a podcast after it. Makes total sense. Yeah, it's myself, Richard Johnson, formerly of Banner Society, now at the SEC Network, and Alex Kirshner. We try and mash together things like the reporting and the gossip with a lot of schematic work, and also the burgeoning world of gambling coverage. Mm-hmm. So much gambling coverage.
Godfrey's hot picks.
Didn't see that.
I do not do that. I just laugh at the entire concept of it. If you know as much as if you hear as much as I hear about the world of college football and you choose to gamble on it, that is your fault.
You were listing
Hugh
Freeze products, if you will. Relist them and tell us about Hugh Freeze's future.
If you had a team in the Southeastern Conference right now, if you're an NFL fan, I'm only talking to the NFL right now. You had DK Metcalf, AJ Brown, and Dawson Knox. How many games do you think you would win in this climate of the SEC right now?
I would think
double digit,
the way
Paul?
People are throwing the ball, I think you would win a lot of games.
Laramie Tunsil.
You would not. You would not. Completely unremarkable. They also have the left tackle for the Panthers, Greg Little. I mean, they were loaded with NFL talent.
And they didn't win.
Woefully inconsistent because of off-field shenanigans and, in general, all these nouns and adjectives I have to think of to use on the radio to describe Hugh Freeze. Prurient interests derailing an otherwise successful program. I can say this as an alumnus. I understand exactly what went on there, probably better than most of the media. And now this individual goes to Liberty of all places, puts himself through a reputation car wash, and is considered to be a hot coaching commodity. Amazing how this world works.
Just give it time and everything washes itself off.
There's been a narrative, Godfrey, speaking of coaches, that during the COVID season, we're not going to see a lot of movement. And,
yeah.
And some people take it to say, we're not going to see any coaching changes. This is the year that you just push through.
Right.
Is that the case at Auburn?
So I wrote a piece about this week that was kind of it is technically a joke. I am not technically promoting this conspiracy theory. However, after what happened on Saturday, which was, we talked about this in the earlier segment, Auburn has had a series of officiating blunders that have swung them games so they could get to the ripe record of 3-2. There is a world in which three calls go the other way and Auburn is at least 1-4, if not winless. Of course, we know what that means on the plains. They'd be seeking a way to find a way to buy out Gus Malzahn.
Mm-hmm.
So I was texting with an Auburn booster about this, someone who would know when these things would happen and someone who has previously asked me my opinion on, hey, what about this coach? What about this timeline? And we just talk. It's just talk, okay? He joked to me, wouldn't it be funny if the officiating the SEC was doing this on purpose because Auburn boosters are so crazy that they would pay a $21 million buyout from private money this year in the middle of an economic recession where all these athletic departments can't pay their bills? But these crazy boosters have 21 laying around, which, by the way, I would add one thing. In the deal, 10.5 of the 21 is due within 30 days of severance. So this isn't a pay.
Whoa.
You're not going Rent-A-Center style. On
cash
this, okay?
On
yeah. There's no pawn shop in this. There is no payment. All right? You've got to have 10.5 to get him out the door before you go and probably sign somebody to at least a 5-for-7 deal. at least, and they don't even know who they want, I might add. So wouldn't it be funny if the SEC was...
So your answer is no.
Well, the booster was saying, like, wouldn't this be the stupid thing that gets Congress involved? Like, actually gets a Democratic Congress to come and bring everybody to Washington and say, what the hell is going on? And you know what? It was funny, so I wrote it. That's it. Do I technically believe it? Maybe not.
Was Van Jefferson also a U Freeze guy?
He was.
There you go.
Went to Florida.
Penn State. Penn State. Yeah. How did you like that whole game play out with Indiana?
There's something afoot here. I will say this. Indiana was undervalued. Okay, they have been saying for a long time they are a development program and no one was listening. He's one of the best DC's turned head coaches I've seen in a long time, Tom Allen. He was just, I mean, I would say he, but they were the victim of a lot of single score losses and a lot of margin games. Obviously, they had the huge lead against Tennessee with, what, 4 minutes left in the bowl game. So yep. I will say this. They were undervalued. However, what I'm seeing at Penn State is alarming if I'm a Penn State fan. Okay, the defense is starting to erode a little bit. Brent Pry, the longtime DC there, he really could have had a number of head coaching jobs and stuck around. They don't look as talented. They are not dominating in recruiting. They're flat out not being that program that's right after Ohio State and Michigan. They're inroads being made into the state of Pennsylvania. That's the number one most alarming thing to me. And they were very lackluster on offense. I don't know if hiring Minnesota's OC was the right move.
Did they score on that 2-point conversion?
Yeah.
Well, I know they did.
If it's a 50-50 call, then it's the ruling on the field, right?
Sure.
Okay.
You can't overturn it based on what you saw. But I mean, there's no way to tell if
who wants to rob? Who wants to beat up a kid in a wheelchair?
I'm not trying to rob them of the points. I'm not against Indiana scoring.
They are the little kid on the crutch on Christmas morning who doesn't have any food.
It's just the example of, you know, in the replay world, it's still
yeah.
Is he in or is he not? You know, it's crazy.
Well, there's never going to be a consensus on this stuff.
And on the decision to go for the win.
Yeah.
Right.
Love the decision.
Me too.
And one thing I have never seen in my career is a coach cite precedents from previous seasons. Coaches are always about, we're 1-0 this week. Right. We're on to the next thing.
Present.
Right. We're never. Tom Allen came out in the game and he said, flat out, I had to do this. This program has been through much. We've been in this situation so many times. Talked about the Outback Bowl against Tennessee. Talked about games against Ohio State. Talked about losing games to brands that they should have beaten, Michigan State, over the last 3-4 years. And he said, that factored into my decision to go for two. Never, ever seen a coach say that publicly, ever.
I do like that.
Because, hey, all the fans are thinking about that, right? We as fans, we do not have we don't have temporary memory. We don't go 1-0 every week. We live with this, right? We contextualize everything as one long, unending chain of pain, if you're from Atlanta. So if you that factors into your fandom, I think why not have it factor into a decision? And look, he's a god for it now, right? They just beat Penn State. He looks like a genius.
Godfrey, the podcast is Split Zone Duo, 38 Godfrey on Twitter, Banner Society. Thank you, man. Good to see you.
I'm sad Chad wasn't here after Alabama did what it did.
Yeah.
I'll have to do therapy next week.
He needed a day. He's sad he's not here because of the brisket and the burnt ends that are about to be delivered to us. Stick around for some lunch.
Oh, no, I'm here for the food. Paul's great, but I'm here for the food.
They got the Adley's Cold Deli as well.
Yeah.
Some cold cuts. You can enjoy all that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Bring the menu over for you. Good to see you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We will hear from Titans head coach Mike Vrabel when we return.
We'll see if he's a little more high energy today.
All right, we'll see if he brings the energy for Paul. Midday 180 delivered by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone.
It's now easier to watch a Titans game while listening to Mike Keith and Coach Mack. Because who wants to hear the national announcers when you can hear your own local guys? Download the 104.5 The Zone app, then turn down your TV. Or open the app while you're at Nissan Stadium. This is your home for Titans football. 104.5 The Zone. Next